Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1964. The topic is trainer education and the title is Programming Adjustments When Peaking for a Powerlifting Meet. I just met with a business client, and we were talking about this concept. And as it turns out, I have three clients competing, not this upcoming weekend, but the weekend after that. So I think it's March 23rd on a Saturday. So I have three of them competing, and I actually used them as examples for the business client this morning when we were talking about what we would do to peak somebody for their best strength for a specific day. So the clients, one is an IFBB pro. They have an elite total in two different weight classes, and we're just working to keep crushing things and keep pushing. The other one is in their early 20s. They're approaching an elite total. They have a 600 plus pound squat and deadlift, soon to be a 700 pound deadlift. And their like kind of quote unquote weakness would be is their bench press is kind of slow to develop to balance the other lifts. But we've been doing great on that. They're bench pressing, I think they're going to be probably in the mid, like maybe 320s, 330s now. So that's going to be really good. They're going to put together a good total, likely over 1600. And then the third person is in the military, and they had 8 years off and a really bad shoulder injury. So we're working to kind of come back from that. And they are currently at an 8x body weight total. So they're going to do great. So they're likely going to hit their elite total. So I'm really excited. These are awesome clients, very fun people to work with. They will do absolutely anything and everything I ask them to. And I love it because I also get input from them, and it's just a nice learning experience for everybody. It's also fun because these three people are programmed differently. The military guy does jiu-jitsu and has an explosive nature. He is just incredibly fast, incredibly aggressive. If you were to blindfold him and tell him, you know, you don't know what the weight on the bar is, I just want you to move it, he will move it with 1,000,000% intensity and with no expectation of getting hurt or not getting it. I mean, he just, good God. I love it. He will just do anything. The other ones move a little slower. So we have had to work on kind of explosiveness in the sense of having controlled positioning while being explosive. It's not in their nature to be super fast, but we're working on it. We're doing great. And the other one, just crazy busy, million and one things going on. And we do our training kind of in the gaps of everything else, but yet it works great. That's one of the beautiful things about powerlifting is the workouts can be 30, 40 minutes long. They can be 3 hours if you wanted them to. So these clients, like the one client, they do a 20-minute kind of morning session on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And then they have a daytime session on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. That's about probably around 40-ish minutes. So they have theirs broken up. It's like 20 minutes in the morning, 40 minutes midday on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Wednesday, just, you know, eat healthy, be active. Saturday and Sunday, eat healthy, be active. The other client, they do probably an hour and a half. They're a little bit longer in the workouts. And they're going to be Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Then the other client does probably about an hour to an hour and a half, but just 3x a week. And it's whenever the hell he can fit it in. So there's a little bit of background into like the volume that they're training with, but yet all three are successful. We've been able to accomplish all of their goals. Like the two male clients, well, actually all three clients have lost weight. The one client, we went from, I think they lost 20-ish pounds to get down to ideal weight and actually still went up in their total, their powerlifting total. The other client, we've gone from 195 down to 165, and they're actually stronger. That's the one that's in the military, so he lost 30 pounds, but is even stronger than where he was before. So that's awesome. And we rehabbed an injury while losing 30 pounds. The other one we've lost, I think roughly 10-ish pounds, but coming back from a pregnancy. So that was awesome. She has 6 kids and, you know, kind of rebuilding the core strength, rebuilding all the muscle tissue that might have been lost in those pregnancies. But it's pretty awesome to know that all of the people have been able to train in a way that fits their schedule. They've been able to lose weight as needed to optimize their body composition and also recover and rehab issues. So the one client had a bad shoulder injury. The one's coming back from pregnancy. The other one had a hip issue that was flared up whenever we first started working together. And for the most part, I think we've crushed that. I actually forgot to even be asking him about that in the last couple weeks. So that's been totally fine. So overall, everything is going well for each of these clients. And, you know, we'll continue to see what happens here in almost a little short of 2 weeks. Now, with their programming, the adjustments that I would typically make is roughly about 3 to 4 weeks ahead of the meet. And it's a little different because of scheduling differences and, you know, maybe somebody's going on vacation, they're come back from vacation, and we want to have an extra week of, you know, getting them back into the swing of things, or they have to leave and do something crazy for work, so we do it a little early. But usually 3 to 4 weeks ahead of the meet, I'll have them do like a 9 RPE, maybe a 9.5, if you get into like the, you know, fractions there. But like a 9 RPE attempt on squat, bench, and deadlift all within the same week. Or usually within a training week. So maybe the client who does like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, I might have them lift really heavy on the Friday, then the Monday, then the Wednesday. But it's all usually within a training week or a calendar week, I guess you'd say. So I have them do 9 RPE. So they'll work up to something that we're 99.9% sure they're going to get it. We don't know how pretty it's going to be. But we know it's not going to be hideously like awful, and they're borderline of whether they could or could not get it. What this means is, as we've been progressing in our training, like maybe they're in a new level of strength. So maybe in a past meet, like they benched, and I'm going to use pounds, even though powerlifting is kilograms, just because it's easier for us to kind of mentally track. Well, easier for the Americans to mentally track what I'm saying here. Let's say they lifted 300 pounds in a previous meet. And in our training, they've gotten back up to, they did like a 280 super clean, 290 super clean. They even hit a 300 super clean. And now we're like, hey, you know, that was about 8 weeks before the meet. I wonder what they're going to be at now. I would go ahead and go above that known PR. Maybe have them try 305, 310. Assuming that the 300 was super clean. I'm not going to hold them back from something that, you know, if they went full send, they went 10 RPE, maybe they could get 315, 320. So instead, we'll just try 305, 310. So we're trying something a little under an all-out max. But maybe they have a lift where last time we went to the meet, we tried a 615-pound squat, and it didn't quite work. This time in training, we're feeling okay-ish at like a 585, but we had some hip issues, they had some scheduling conflicts, their food's been a little crazy due to like a work event, and I'm like, hey, you know what? We know that we probably have the strength for 615 in there. We've done it before, or we've gotten really dang close to it before, but if we've only been doing 585 in training so far, if that was clean, maybe we'll try 600. If it wasn't clean, we'll just try 585 again. But I want something that's a 9 RPE, and I do pay attention to what they've been doing to know where the 9 RPE would probably be, but I let it be wherever it is, regardless of what they've done or not done in previous meets. Meaning, if in the previous meet, like we said, their best bench was 300, but in training they smoked a 300, then we're going to go ahead above that and just let them test that out, let them see how that feels. But let's say we want to get a 300 pound at the bench at the competition, but the only thing they've tried successfully and cleanly in training is 275. I'm not going to have them try 300 pound like 4 weeks before the meet if we know they're just not quite ready for it, or if we think that would have to be a 10 RPE and like the perfect day for that to work. I'm not looking for that. So I wouldn't force them to try to lift what I hope they can do at the meet. When we're 3 to 4 weeks out from the meet, We want to lift what we believe we can do cleanly at that time. So 9 RPE at that time, regardless of what we're hoping to hit at the meet. So if they've only been working up and prepared for, you know, say 500 pounds, but you want to hit 550 at the meet, too bad. Like, you're not doing 550 right now. So we would do what we can do cleanly, what we can have for confidence. And then maybe at the meet, we'll go full send, go 10 RPE at like the third attempt. Maybe we'll give it a shot if they're feeling good that day. But typically, 3 to 4 weeks out before a meet, you're not as fresh as you could be. Your CNS isn't peaked. You still have had pretty aggressive accessories. You just haven't had, like, you're not in an optimal state. You're in a great trained state, but you're not in a fully recovered, fully peaked state yet. So you don't try fully recovered, fully peaked expectations of numbers. So again, about 3 to 4 weeks out from the meet, I'll have them attempt about a 9 RPE on each lift, squat, bench, and deadlift. The reason why is from this, we can see what cues they maybe mess up or cues we didn't quite get right. So that gives us now 3 to 4 weeks to practice those cues. And then those are likely going to be the cues that we would say on meet day, hey, remember this, remember XYZ. So it really gives us a final approach in regards to technique. It also gives me an idea of their level of fatigue, meaning maybe in the week they squat really well, but deadlifts kind of like look like they're kind of shit the bed. They're kind of slow. They didn't go as great as we thought we would. Well, that lets us know that we're fatigued. The hips are fatigued. Maybe the CNS is still fatigued. So I have to draw back even more on the accessory intensity, play with their food a little bit to give them allow them more energy over the next 3 to 4 weeks to let that catch up. Maybe the squat's great. Maybe the deadlift is super crisp, super fast. Awesome. Then we can see that they're not behind in recovery. So therefore, I can still push some volume in their training. I can actually still be more aggressive in their food if I need to be. So it lets me kind of see where their level of fatigue is. Also, it gives us awareness if there's any acute injury issue. So if we attempt a 9 RPE a week, like three to four weeks out from the meet, and they go, oh, dang, man, like the next couple days, my elbow is really bugging me. Ooh, okay, good for us to know that. So that way we can work on, you know, shoulder mobility. We can work on figuring out what that elbow issue was, get that cleaned up, get that healed up, get the inflammation down. So that way when they go into the meet, that's not a lingering little problem that leads to a big injury at the meet. So it actually lets us kind of check and see if there are any small issues that could turn into really big issues at the meet. So, for example, if somebody goes into the meet and they tear their pec, but we look back and we say, oh, okay, 4 weeks before that, they were talking about, even 4 to 8 weeks before that, they were talking about their chest feeling tight. Well, why the hell didn't you address that then? You know? So this gives us a chance to kind of check and see if there's any little acute annoyances so that way we can make sure they're healed up and ready to go at the time of the meet. So that's very helpful to do that, like 9 RPE lifts 3 to 4 weeks out from the meet. Then what I do in the upcoming weeks from then, so 3 to 4 weeks out from the meet to the actual meet, we're going to lower the CNS intensity and the muscular damage creation of all movement prep and accessories. So whatever they do before they squat and after they squat, whatever they do before they bench and after they bench, whatever they do before they deadlift and after they deadlift, all the intensity of that is going to come down. I'm not going to have them do something that requires an insane amount of weight load. We're not doing like an overloaded high handle trap bar deadlift to oh, it's going to peak their CNS. No, that's going to rock their CNS. So you don't do that, you know, within 3 to 4 weeks out from a meet. So if I want to peak CNS, I'm going to do like bodyweight explosive jumps, not some like max effort overloaded trap bar deadlift. So we want to bring the intensity of lifts and movement prep down. And then we also want to reduce the muscle damage that could be created from those lifts. So for example, one of the clients, I had him doing front squats after his back squats because he needs to have really strong quadriceps for his style of squatting. So he was doing front squats leading up to these 9 RPE attempts. And now that we did those leading into the meet, we're going to swap the front squats for, say, dumbbell hang hold walking lunges. Now, walking lunges, they're a lighter weight load than what you can front squat. especially when we're talking about dumbbell hang hold. So he's not putting a bar across his back and doing walking lunges, which could still be done exceptionally heavy and unnecessarily heavy. We're not going to do like a barbell split squat, Bulgarian squat kind of thing. We're just doing dumbbell hang hold deadlifts. So he's probably going to end up holding maybe 40, 50, 60 pound dumbbells. That's it. That's far less weight load than what the front squats would be. And the movement pattern of a walking lunge helps to promote more openness of the hips compared to a front squat. Front squat, you run the risk of just overloading and exhausting the hip flexors. Whereas with walking lunges, you now get out of that pattern, that squatting pattern, and you can start to open up tightnesses in the hip flexors, start to activate the glute to help to open up the front of the hip joint. You start to stretch the adductors more. So there's a lot of movement quality improvement from walking lunges versus front squats. But the front squats were needed to drive his quad strength for the 12 to 8 weeks before the meet. But that's an example of what we do is in the movement prep and accessory stuff, your CNS intensity comes down and the muscular damage creation comes down. I also will tend to swap those movements for more corrective therapy style movements. So rather than like a dumbbell overhead press, maybe I'll have them do something that works on shoulder mobility in a loaded or even lighter loaded kind of positioning. So that way we can work on improving tightnesses in the pec major, pec minor, subscapularis, any of those things, lats, before we get into heavy max effort bench pressing at the meet. So I will take overhead press work and focus more on shoulder positioning and mobility rather than maximal pressing strength. I'll also switch up to a lot of body weight movements. So if I had been having them do like CNS prep before their deadlift, maybe were yoke walks, now we'll switch and do like depth jumps or like continuous vertical jumps or vertical jump to a broad jump. We'll do single leg bounds. So I'll have them do body weight explosive, which still kind of gets their CNS prepped and ready for that day's deadlifts, but it's not as overwhelming to the CNS as a yoke walk would be. So you're going to swap a lot of accessories for more corrective therapy type movements, and you're going to switch any kind of CNS prep stuff from loaded to unloaded, just bodyweight stuff. Now, the main lifts, if they're not behind in recovery, I'll typically have them still kind of repeat those 9 RPE attempts. So, for example, the one client last week, they did a 515 squat and a 515 deadlift in training. He's a 165 pounder. And those actually moved pretty clean. They were heavy, but they moved them very clean. Now, that's 3 weeks before the meet. So what we're doing this week is I'm actually just having them repeat the squat. I'm going to bring the deadlift down, though, because the deadlift will end up being about kind of roughly 9 days before the meet. I don't want to max out their spinal erectors and kind of their CNS at 9 days out. But the squat, I'm going to have them go ahead and repeat the squat. Since they did it clean, I want them to do it again. And that helps just reinforce technique at a near maximal effort. It improves their confidence because it's probably going to move a little smoother because they got to do it again. It's always moves a little smoother the second time you do it rather than the first time you do it. So that's going to improve his confidence. Then for the deadlift, with the deadlift being that close to the meet, only 9 days out, we're going to do a little bit lower than where we're at the 9 RPE. We might drop 10% from that and then just do a bunch of singles. And that'll help kind of still, it'll almost be like speed work, but much heavier than you typically do speed work. But it'll feel efficient, it'll feel smooth, it'll feel very confident. Whereas, say we tested the top lifts at 4 weeks out for the meet, and now I have 3 weeks to the meet, I would still have him probably repeat that 515 deadlift because now we're at, oh gosh, what would that be? 7, 14, 16 days from the meet. So no worries there for lower back fatigue. So what you're looking for is if they're not under recovered, you're basically going to be redoing the 9 RPE lifts to just let them gain confidence, build on their technique under that like heavy of intensity. But if they are behind in recovery, or you're getting too close to the meet, like the deadlifts being only 9 days from the meet, you're going to drop down to 90% of that RPE and have them attempt multiple singles. It gives the same benefits for allowing a repeated technique challenge and building confidence. But if you know they're under-recovered, meaning their body's ability is lessened than maximum, then you don't want them lifting maximum weights. You want them to kind of, you want to bring the weights down to match where the body is. What that does is that allows for a decreased recovery deficit created. So therefore they can actually catch up on recovery. So you're not trying to bury them further behind in recovery if you think they're already behind. So it's very important to say, okay, I want to test them where they are. I don't want to bury them any further. So you're just asking the body to do kind of what it can. And that gets the confidence, that gets the technique refinement, that continuation of the physical development. But it doesn't create this huge deficit that now all of a sudden you have to try to recover from before the meet. You actually want them being out of a deficit before the meet. One of the backfires of this actually is I'll have clients where they're feeling great CNS-wise, they're feeling great recovery-wise, 1 to 2 weeks out from the meet. And then all of a sudden, they add some stupid shit that I didn't tell them to do. So this is a little mini rant from me. But like I'll have them work up on squats and say, you know, the week before they did 515. They're going to be like, well, 515 moves so well. I went ahead and tried 525. I'm like, damn it, don't do that. I was like, if I didn't write it, please don't do it. Or text me before you do it so I can tell you not to do it. But it's like, damn. So here I am trying to make sure they're recovered and refreshed and excited and their CNS is good. And then they bury themselves. And it's like, damn it. So it happens actually quite often, which is very frustrating. I understand the psychology of it because if it went smoothly, they're like, well, I know at the meet, I'm probably going to want to do more than this. Let me see, like, am I capable of more? Where am I at? Where am I at? Where am I at? And they want to kind of like prove to themselves what they can do at the meet. So maybe they moved 515 super smooth. So they're hoping for 545 at the meet. So they're like, well, maybe I'll try 525 or 535. I'll try to bridge that gap a little bit. And meanwhile, I'm like, damn it, I'm doing all this work, programming-wise, to balance all these crazy things, and here you are adding stuff. So the backfire to it sometimes is they feel too good too early. Now, that's not actually a downside. They would be fine if they would just follow the program and go to the meet. But it works out well enough that even if they do try something crazy 2 or 3 weeks before the meet, there's enough recovery built in, or I can make some adjustments to make that okay. But if you are one of my clients, please don't add stuff. Don't do that. So I can fix it 99.9% of the time, but now we're playing with a situation that was less than optimal. And we're trying to make the best of what you did. Don't make me make the best of what you did. Let's just do the best. So, but that's how I want my clients feeling is as they lead into a meet. I don't want them feeling like absolute crap and hoping that by the time the meet day comes, they feel better. I want them feeling good and saying, man, I feel like I could do a little more. Like this program isn't kind of like fully maximized. I might be able to add this or I might be able to add that. I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. So we want you to come into the meet with that feeling of saying, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to do this lifts because I think I can actually do better than what I've been doing. I'm excited. I think there's room. Rather than trying to push yourself, then all of a sudden you come into the meet and you're like, oh, you know, it moved so well, you know, 2 weeks ago, but now I just feel so tired. And it's like, damn it, that's your CNS feeling crushed. Like you've created too much of a recovery deficit and you weren't able to catch up. That's especially true if somebody has to drop water weight or drop body weight to get to the meet weight. So they might try something a little extra 2 to 3 weeks before the meet. Now all of a sudden we got to start cutting calories. We got to start dropping water weight. They have to do some extra sauna time. We got to do some other odds and ends. And that all zaps into the CNS a little bit. So they weren't able to have recovery capacity that they anticipated due to the small little nuances of annoyances that we have to do to get them to their body weight. So then they go into the day and they feel fatigued and tired. And it's like, well, that's exactly what's going to happen. So the idea of the programming, when you're thinking of the last 3 or 4 weeks before a meet, is to just, the main focus is to work on mental confidence. That's more important than anything. You want to feel good physically. You want to feel confident towards the main lifts. We would rather have them coming into the meet believing that they could actually lift more than they've been doing. saying, like, coming into the meet going, I feel great now. You know, geez, I'm trying like 30, 40, 50 pounds heavier than I've been doing in training. Ooh, I hope it goes well. I hope I can do this. But they feel good, right? Rather than them coming into the meet saying, well, I was able to get my second attempt 4 weeks ago, but I feel like absolute shit. I don't even know if I could do it today. That's not good. So don't worry about trying to hit a certain weight before the meet. You want to feel good about the weights you've been hitting. And then at the meet, you could try something a little extra. That 9 RPE that we had at like 3 to 4 weeks before the meet, maybe we make that the opener, or maybe we make a small percentage under that, like 2.5% under that, the opener. So then all of a sudden they go out there, they hit the opener, and they feel confident because they've already done that in training. Then the second attempt is a little a bit above that, and they go, oh, hey, you know, that was really good. It was heavy, heavy, but felt good. And then on the third one, we try something a little fun, see what happens. Now, their connective tissues are going to be totally fine because we've been building it up through the total volume and intensity of the entire program leading into the meet. So we only dropped the intensity of the accessories the last 3 or 4 weeks. That's not enough time to where the integrity of the connective tissue would downgrade or degrade or anything like that. So they're still going to have very safe, very strong connective tissues. So on the meet day, if we try something, you know, 10% more than we've been doing, 5 to 10% more than we've been doing in training, they'll be fine. They're going to be fine, no injury concerns, all good. Because if you remember, we've been doing 9 RPE lifts, meaning we've always been training a little under what they really truly could possibly do. So that means we don't have an accumulated micro tears in their connective tissue beyond what their body's been able to maintain and or recover from. So they're not coming into the meet 5 pounds away from ripping something off the bone. And this is extremely helpful and very important to control. Now, especially if somebody's taking extra supplementation, you know, wink, wink kind of supplementation, because they'll go into the meet and or in their training and they've been overreaching. They've been overreaching the connective tissue due to the drug aid. And you have to be very, very careful when you're using any kind of like strength-based drugs to still stay within the realm of what your body can recover from, so there's not that micro tissue damage accumulating leading into the meet in the muscle tissue and connective tissue that you're just not going to feel. So it's extremely important to be calm and to be patient with your body when you're getting ready for a meet if you are on extra supplementation, because it masks a lot of underlying issues. And that's where people will get a lot of detachments or muscle tears or some issues like that. So overall, the main focus the last 4 weeks coming into a meet is to let the body recover. Don't continue to try to bury the body. Whatever strength you have 4 weeks out from the meet, focus on maintaining that, not trying to build upon it. Just maintain healthy movement, let your body start to recover, where you wake up a little more fresh, you're not waking up dead tired every day, where you have to dump caffeine in your face immediately. We want to start getting a little more sleep. You want to make sure your food has been dialed in. If it hasn't been, gosh, you definitely should be. The last 4 weeks, you want to be very consistent with your protein, consistent with your calories, consistent with your hydration. So that way the last week you can kind of, you know, water manipulate or carb manipulate if you need to adjust body weight, but you're not coming into that last week already under recovered. You want to be fully recovered. The body's feeling great. Like I said, a week or two before the meet, you should feel like in training, you want to add work. You're like, oh man, I think I can add a squat, or I can add this, or I can add that. Don't. But that's the feeling you want, is that you feel refreshed, you feel ready, you feel excited that you could actually be doing more if you needed to. Your programming shouldn't be pushing you to the max where you barely finish everything and you're dead tired when you get home. You're dead tired in the morning. You just, you know, you're too tired to even eat during the day. We want to feel a little more refreshed than that. We want to feel kind of excited and ready to go rather than feeling beat up. Okay. I know this was probably more conceptual than giving you specific exercises, specific numbers or anything, but I wanted to stay at this level because as a trainer, this is a trainer education post, so as a trainer of other people or a trainer of yourself, it's helpful to learn concepts and then learn the specifics of how to apply those. The reason why is because the specifics for one person aren't the same for each. So again, I'm referencing the three people I have competing in like, you know, a week and a half or so. None of their programs are the same. They're not even structured the same. So the one person does two a day workouts, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The other one does full 1 hour and a half, kind of workouts, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. The other one only does 3 days a week, and I don't even care what days they are. So you can't get into specifics, because as you start to work with more people, even as you develop in strength, the strength that you have, the way you train yourself to get to like a 6 times body weight total will be different than it takes to get to a 7 or an 8 times body weight total. As your body develops, as certain things progress faster than other things, as your life changes, maybe you start while you're in college and now you're still going, but you have a full-time job. Maybe you started before having a significant other in your life, but now you do have a significant other in your life. There's a lot of things that change over time. So it's important to understand the concepts behind the programming so that way you can change the specifics to meet the individual needs. If you only learn specifics, you'll never actually be that good of a trainer, because you're going to try to jam everyone into, like, you're trying to fit everybody into that, you know, like square peg in a round hole kind of thing. If you only learn the round hole and you're trying to jam every shape and every person you get into that round hole, it's going to work for some and it is absolutely not going to work for others. So it's better to learn how to shape the programming to the person than to try to force the person to the program, right? So hopefully this was helpful. If this was something that was interesting and you want to learn anything more, if you have any extra questions, just go to our website, www.brutallirongym.com. On the bottom of the homepage is a contact form. You can send me any questions you have, any requests you want for podcasts, anything you need. Anytime you want to get in touch, the website would be a great place to do that. So I hope this was helpful. If you need anything else, if you're ever interested in me writing your programming, you can learn about the services we have on the website. I love this stuff, and I would absolutely be happy to work with anybody. But I hope that you can learn a lot through these podcasts that, you know, if financially that's not a possibility, I want you to still be able to make progress and love your life and work towards your dreams and goals. If you have the financial ability to hire a coach, I would hope that you feel confident with me. But hire anybody that you think, you know, matches you and they seem to know what they're doing, but in a sense of they know how to do it for individuals, not just their way or the highway kind of approach. Okay. If you need anything, go to the website, reach out from there. If you like the information, if you like the podcast, make sure you share the podcast. And also, if you like the podcast, you can consider donating to support the podcast. It does have a high yearly cost to host this and do all these things. So I appreciate those who do donate to help cover some of that. So I genuinely appreciate the donations. They significantly help. They literally 100% go right back to the fees and all that stuff. So I appreciate any donations anybody's willing to give. And you can do that on the website. And then if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can always find more from us on our social media channels. I post pretty much every day on Instagram, and I'm starting to post at least 3 videos a week on YouTube. So there's more information and different stuff than what we cover in the podcasts on Instagram and YouTube. And you can find us under both platforms under the name Brutal Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.